welcome everybody to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through Time Lords and space, where a wonderful group of companions set out to find information related to Doctor Who, discuss it, and tear it apart sometimes, as we've done a couple episodes back. I am Dolly Demosky. Joining me is the one and the only Marcus Beer.
I am quite literally the one and the only, because the rest of our merry band of misfits have decided not to turn up.
Yeah. Stephen and Sean, we're waiting for you jerks. Until then...
Friggin' amateur hour here. Some of us are adults, you know?
Well, we're going to be running a nice tight ship then. I'm sure we'll have an adult conversation for a change. You and I are the oldest ones.
Without those two, I mean, and it'd be nice not to have to mute Strom for a week.
Oh, man. That's right. The mute wars.
Yeah.
Well, Marcus. So,
two episodes.
Oh, no. Steven just joined the call.
Oh, but he's muted. I didn't mute him. I swear I didn't mute him.
Good.
Yeah, so we have two episodes to talk about.
Yep.
He
figured out how to unmute himself. Hey, Steven.
No, I knew how to unmute myself, Dally. Don't ever believe for a second that I don't know how to make it so that people hear my voice.
We are screwed. Hello, welcome back, Steven.
Hi.
To all our wonderful fans, it's been a couple weeks. Obviously, last week was E3. A bunch of us had, the industry that the majority of us are part of was brought to its knees with the biggest conference of the year here in the States. And so we were all really busy and swamped and didn't get a chance to record, but that's okay. We have two wonderful episodes to talk about, or two episodes to talk about today. We will discuss how wonderful they are. We're going to do this a little bit quicker to just kind of get through it and cut all the fat off this. Like if we're doing a really nice steak, we're not going for the marbled steak. We're going for more of the strip steak. So, I love
Dally, or Sean is the marble, you know.
Sean is the marble.
In the steak.
That's true. The two episodes we're going to talk about are the Empress of Mars, episode 9, and the Eaters of Light, episode 10. And that's going to set us up for the final two episodes of this season and then the Christmas episode after that. So, the Empress of Mars, I'll do a very quick summary. The Doctor and Bill and Nardole somehow pop up in NASA. And NASA discovers the words "God Save the Queen" buried under an ice cap on Mars. So the Doctor and his merry crew head off to 1881, where the year that the words seem to have appeared on Mars. They discover soldiers from Victorian Britain. Very bizarre. How does it happen? They also discover the Ice Warriors are still there, or at least one Ice Warrior named Friday, that they've nicknamed him. Friday crash landed to Earth sometime before then, promised the Victorian soldiers, the British soldiers, that there's treasure up on Mars, and so they go along with him. However, Friday decided that he's really using them so that he can resurrect his queen. They do manage to resurrect the Empress, the Queen of Mars, of the Ice Warriors, and just as she's about to resurrect the entire Ice Warrior race, the Doctor and crew and his friends there calm the Queen down, calm the Empress down, decide to somehow work together, and the threat is over. That's the Empress of Mars. The Eaters of Light we'll get to in a second, but I wanted to kind of talk about Empress of Mars first. So I want to start with Marcus. We've been starting with everybody else lately. Marcus, what were your thoughts about the Empress of Mars?
Well, it wasn't as bad as the previous two episodes. I mean, it was reminding me of John Carter of Mars.
I think that was kind of intentional.
Yeah. Disney turned into that box office disaster of a movie.
What a horrible movie that was.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't well received, was it? But it felt very much, you know, it's a similar time, colonial, sort of like colonial England. I gotta say, after the three-parter, and this applies to, you know, somewhat to last week's episode, I don't think it's picked up. I don't think it's matched the pace of the first sort of like five episodes. And I think this was another one that it was nice. Everything was tied up in a nice bow. We had, you know, we had colonialism. There was a Brexit analogy in there as well, you know, on how to treat immigrants and blah, 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 blah. But I just thought it was a bit dull. I mean, especially when you have the Ice Warriors and, you know, the Ice Warriors who, you know, it was almost like a redo of the Matt Smith episode where they were in the Russian submarine. If you remember, the one right. they're in the Russian submarine. Was that Matt Smith?
Yeah, it was Matt Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, you're the last of it. You know, you can be the better person. You don't have to kill all these people and blah, de blah, de blah, de blah. I mean, I don't think there's been a good episode about Mars since The Waters of Mars. And I think this was okay. There's nothing, I mean, there's nothing to write home about in this episode for me. Nothing that's rocked my world.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I'd say I kind of agree with that, Dally, if you don't mind me just jumping in here.
Sure thing, my friend.
I was telling kind of in the chat and everything, I like
this. Wait, hold on. Before I do let you jump in, Sean would have completely put a kibosh on you talking at this moment. But I am kind enough to say, Stephen, go right ahead, my friend.
Well, I'm glad to know that Sean ranks so highly above me that he would have veto power over me. Right. So thanks for revealing that little bit of behind-the-scenes business. No, I like this episode.
I would never interrupt you. I mean, I would just let you go and have you let you say your piece.
Just where's that mute button? There it is. I liked it. I did not love it, but it was like you said, Marcus. I think we have not picked up that same energy that we had before the three-parter. The three-parter really, really came to a crashing halt. There were some not great episodes before that, but there was a certain kind of energy and a certain kind of general theme going on with the show, which I think is picked up again here, that just completely falls off the rails in the three-parter. But again, we're back to the concept specifically of like the humans are the bad guys, or at least they're no better than the aliens or robots or whatever it happens to be at the given time. In this case, the Ice Warriors, than anyone else. They're just as culpable for everything that goes on. And you know, tying into the you know the British colonialism and the imperialism and stuff like that, it was kind of interesting. It was a little bit more heavy-handed in here than like I feel that it has been, worked or like when they tried to work in like the real life things in the previous episodes, specifically like the ice monster under the Thames with you know working in the stuff like the race and stuff like that. I thought they were able to get across a lot of that stuff with character moments that really helped to endear me to Bill and the Doctor. Whereas here it's very much kind of a bottle episode, monster of the week type thing, and it's very focused on these kind of like. This cast of kind of disposable characters. But at the same time, you know, that's not always the worst thing in the world. It's just, you know, it didn't stick out too terribly well in comparison. The only weird thing is, like, you bring up the John Carter thing, and I think that was very intentional. I think that was an intentional call to, like, tie that all together. And I don't know. That's a weird pull, I guess. The episode's called, like, The Empress of Mars, which to me sounds like A Princess of Mars, which is one of the John Carter books. It's like one of the first John Carter books in time, but then tying all that stuff to British colonialism and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. Edgar Rice Burroughs was an American writer and stuff like that. So like, I can see why maybe the BBC wouldn't want to like be throwing shade at other countries or something like that. But I would, my kind of thing is if you're going to make those like allusions and stuff like that, like you can, I'm not necessarily upset, wouldn't be upset if they would maybe like, comments on some of the stuff going on in America as well. You know, we've had our really, really bad shit going on here recently and such. And making these like the allusions to like American story and American characters and stuff like that, it almost seems a little too toothless to make it British. Because like, oh, okay, you're prodding at your own history. You're talking about your own history, but you're not willing to criticize like actions happening elsewhere, like not willing to make stories about this, which is, you know, everybody's got their own shit to deal with and stuff like that, but it almost seems like they were trying to maybe make a statement about something that they kind of wanted to avoid at the same time and didn't quite commit to the bit in either direction. So it just kind of, the end result is a little wishy-washy. It's a little muddled, and what we're left with is kind of that bottle episode monster of the week thing. So not great, but I thought it was okay as just a Ice Warrior monster Martian story.
I'm in the same boat as I think the both of you. I thought it wasn't great, but it was fine for the monster of the week. There was some kind of bizarre character development for some of the characters. I mean, they had the sort of typical greedy dude. They had, although Godzaker was kind of cool, how he was meant to be hanged and then somehow managed to escape and now was able to finally get to kind of lead soldiers towards towards salvation or towards righteousness. But really the only thing that kind of stuck out for me was that Alpha Centauri reference at the end. And I thought, where have I heard this Alpha Centauri? Why is it kind of sticking out? And so I did some, Marcus, you may know this already, but I did some deep diving and I realized, oh, there's an Alpha Centauri reference in the Third Doctor episode where the Ice Warriors are part of the Alpha Centauri. They're part of the kind of Star Federation that Alpha Centauri is a part of. And so I thought, well, that's a kind of a cool tie in there. And then I did a little bit more digging and realized the voice actress from this episode from Alpha Centauri was the same voice actress from that Third Doctor episode. The same actress. They brought her. She's in her 90s now, and they managed to bring her back for this episode. Kind of a cool little tie-in.
Very cool.
But other than that, there wasn't a whole lot, but I think it was fine for just to kind of wash away the memory of the horrible end of that three-parter, which to me it did. I ended up watching this episode twice because I thought it was fun, but it wasn't great. It was okay. It was watchable. I think the fun of it was the only part that really kind of stuck on me. I do like the Ice Warriors. They've kind of grown on me as characters. They're kind of this strange, honorable race of warriors, right? They have their civilization, but they have a lot of honor. So I thought that's kind of cool that kind of stuck through there. But yeah, it was it? I don't want to say it was poorly written, but it was kind of cliche monster of the week. We've said it a million times, but it's the kind of episode that anybody could watch and kind of get the gist of what Doctor Who's about, I guess, without, it's not a terrifying episode like we had earlier in the season with a couple of those like Knock Knock or Oxygen, but it's also not, way out there like that three-parter. So I thought it was fine. Nothing special, but fine enough to recommend to people if they wanted to just watch a regular Doctor Who episode. Certainly better than any of the episodes in that first season of Capaldi. So I'm going
to... Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right to make that comparison, actually. I mean, if that had come in season one, there were a couple in that first Capaldi season. I mean, the flat 2D monsters, that still is a standout scary episode for me. I'm not sure if the Mummy one was a was that season his first or second season, but yeah, if that one had hit 2.5 years ago, we probably would have been raving about it. But I think because they got off to such a strong start, and then crashed so hard this season,
right.
I mean, that third episode of the trilogy, it sucked harder than a Dyson, and it's. Not only just took down that three episodes, it kind of took down the whole season. I mean, it really did just mess things up. And I mean, we're obviously going to talk about the Light Eaters next,
right.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe it's because it was around E3 time and there was so much else going on. But, I mean, I didn't even watch the episodes as they aired. I watched them about an hour and a half later each time. Last Saturday, I forgot Doctor Who was on.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, I think we were all tired and drained from the week before.
I've never forgotten that Doctor Who was on. I mean, the week before, there was a reason because, I was out with some people pre-E3. But I was in the house. I was pottering. I was playing a game. And I knew what time it was, but I just didn't even bother getting up to go and turn on the TV.
You know what's happened to me is where I used to just kind of anxiously 9 o'clock circled, I had that circled on my calendar or on my phone. I would just hop in front of the TV at 9 and watch it live. These last three episodes, I haven't watched live. I watched DVR. In fact, I watched this episode, Empress, when I landed in LA. So I didn't even get a chance to watch it until some point on Sunday of last week. So. Well, let's give our ratings for this episode out of 5 Ice Warrior resurrections. How many would you give it, Steven?
Wow, reaching? Are you reaching that?
There's nothing.
How about 5 like weird crumpled horrifying corpses? Okay. Like
that was cool.
Yeah,
they look like pretzels.
Yes, they did.
Yeah,
that was actually. Thanks for reminding me of that one. That was a really good touch. I like that.
It's fucked up. It's like this season has had like a lot of like weird, like viscerally fucked up imagery, and like that is right up there. Just like the like seeing like fingers and toes sticking out of this little trash compacted body. It's just like and like they just crumpled to the ground like a used cardboard box. And like they just move on with their day. The Ice Warriors just move on with their day. Just like, ugh. Yeah. Ratings though. I don't know. 2.5 out of 5.
Okay. Okay.
Sure. Totally middle of the road. Completely middle of the road.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, they you know, it's so middle of the road. The episode should have a line drawn down it. That's you know, or maybe a median. But yeah, that's how it was, and it's a shame. I mean, you know, some of the acting. I mean, the young black actor who was a soldier. I thought he was brilliant. And you know, the senior guy who, you know, he's a British character actor, has been around for years. You know, who was convicted of cowardice and didn't die and found this new lease of life. That was interesting as well, but it's just still flat. So yeah, I'm team 2.5.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to say, 3. Let's say, I'm gonna go with a solid 3 for this one. I enjoyed it more than you guys did. I didn't think it was horrible. I thought it was a little bit better than average. But I liked it. If the entire season was this kind of episode, I would be okay with it. Do have a little bit of a couple comments here that I'll read over right now. It's from our good friend and listener, Alan Paxton, @Alan_Paxton. He says, I thought it was a strong filler episode, not too over the top, and the premise was actually well planned throughout. I'm intrigued by how they seem to be setting up something big for Missy, but something feels like it's missing given the reaction of the Doctor to her being in the TARDIS. In all, I'm really enjoying Capaldi and his last season, and hopefully we don't see the ball getting dropped before end.
Too late for that. Yeah. Because the monks happened.
It's true, the monks happened. At least the monks happened in the middle of the season instead of the end of the season.
That's fair, sure.
Our good friend, another listener, @Kostich, says, before you get all frowny, he kind of knew. I liked it. Good old-fashioned Who. Should have shot it in black and white. I could see that a black and white episode does kind of seem to fit into that. Yeah, good call.
Okay. I think other shows have done that before where they've done black and white episodes for a thing. I wouldn't mind actually seeing a black and white only episode of Doctor Who.
You want a black and white episode of Doctor Who? Go watch the friggin' Troughton years. <That's> true, black and white for the sake of black and white, unless it's a really interesting plot device. Like,
well, that's, you know, when I say that, I kind of picture that in my head.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. They brought the film Logan out, the Wolverine 3, and got a Blu-ray, and it came with Logan Noir, where it's black and white, and therefore it's moodier. And they did the same with Mad Max Fury Road, because now it's moodier.
Like, the metal and chrome, or the black and chrome edition, or whatever, I think was what that was called.
Like, piss off. I mean, you know, we are not living in the friggin' 1960s or 50s. We are living in the age of color. We are living in an age where, you know, color is everywhere in our TVs and everything like that. So let's just enjoy the bloody thing. I mean, you know, these plot devices and, you know, ways that people touch themselves over, oh, it's gone black and white. And oh my Lord, this is so exciting. It adds so much to the theatricality of it. And piss off.
So the one thing, the one place I would argue against you there, and I get what you're saying, but the one movie where they did like a black and white version that I actually think was somewhat improved by it was The Mist. I don't know if you remember that movie, the based on the Stephen King story, had like Thomas Jane in it.
Really? The one from a few years back?
Yeah, like monsters come out of the mist. The town gets covered in mist and monsters start coming out of it and stuff. The one nice thing about black and white sometimes is similar to like what – and, you know, maybe you just want a good director to handle this kind of thing. Like, but similar to like how a lot of shows that don't necessarily have like a huge like CGI budget might like put their monsters mostly in the dark to kind of keep them scarier and stuff like that. I think sometimes black and white does a good job of like obscuring some of the cartoonier, rubberier looking parts of like monsters and stuff like that and some stuff like that. And kind of, so that's the one place where I could see maybe Doctor Who kind of benefiting from an episode. But like you said, like if there was an episode that had like a storyline based around it in some way, and maybe the characters recognize that, it, you could have some fun with that idea, I think. But not just something I thought I'd bring up.
The only thing I can think of is it would, like I said, it would have to be a major plot device. Just like Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode called Hush, when everybody loses their voices.
It's a silent episode, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a really scary episode.
Totally.
You know, the gentlemen in that one are terrifying. I mean, you know, they remind me of the Whisper Men meeting the Silence. And obviously they predate both by a good decade or so. Or, you know, there was that other one, Once More with Feeling, which was a musical episode. I am not suggesting in any way, shape, or form that we have a Doctor Who musical episode. I do not want to see Peter Capaldi say,
no.
Let's all go to the TARDIS.
No.
I'm going to splice that out. I'm going to put it on loop on my phone.
No. That's his new ringtone.
You'll have to pay me, and I will see you.
Well, let's move on to this past week's episode.
Hang on. Sure. What about the fourth member of the group? Where is he?
Where Sean? So Sean said that he's going to try and join us midway through this episode if he could. That jerk. He hadn't yet watched this week's Doctor Who, which is fine. He could have stayed at least for the first part. That jerky. But it looks like he's not able to make it. So
jerk.
Everybody tweet at Sean Norton when you hear this and say you were disappointed in him not being on this week's episode.
Tell him that you're never going to listen to our podcast again and it's all his fault.
You're never going to listen to it until next week. Let's move on to The Eaters of Light, this past week's episode, episode 10. The summary is The Doctor and Bill. We're talking about the 9th Legion of the Roman Army. And they travel in the TARDIS to the 2nd century in Scotland. Bill heads off one way to try to find the 9th Legion. The Doctor and Nardole look for their bodies because they believe that the 9th Legion has been wiped out. Bill encounters a Legion soldiers hiding, says, I knew you guys are still alive. Soldiers are hiding from a creature drawn to any light source, killing those in its path. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Nardole discover the corpses of the remaining Legion. They later come across a Pict tribe guarding a cairn. The Doctor enters a cairn, passing into an interdimensional portal. And the Pict explains that a warrior goes through the cairn to defeat an Eater of Light. But with the invading Roman army, she allowed one to escape to fight them. Bill leads the surviving Legion away from the creature and end up reuniting with the Doctor and Nardole. So there's one of the creatures still floating around. The Doctor works out a plan to lure the Eater back to the portal during daylight, require someone inside, preventing the creature's escape. Once the creature is trapped, the Pict and the 9th Legion sacrifice themselves to stop the creatures. Back in the TARDIS, Missy awaits their return. The surprise of Bill and Nardole. Missy is free. So, the Eaters of Light. I want to start... with you, Marcus, tell me what did you feel about the Eaters of Light?
All right. This episode could have been a friggin' 10-minute episode. As soon as the doctors figured out what's what, all you had to do was go to the TARDIS, get a friggin' powerful light bulb, lob it at the monster, you know, drag him into his pit and throw more light bulbs in, the flashlights. Done, end of story, no sacrifices needed. nobody giving up their lives, nobody dying because the light was sucked out of them and all that crap. They wouldn't have come out, you know, a couple of Duracell in a flashlight. You know, I'm sure he's got like nuclear Duracell that he could have stuck in an old flashlight. I mean, very disappointing. No, this is another episode. I mean, I enjoyed it more than I did The Empress of Mars. But again, it did feel like a little, you know, a little improvement, and certainly not hitting the scales of the first couple of first 4 or 5 episodes of the season. Always a big fan of when they go to Wales and use it to pretend to be Scotland, because of course, you know, they go to Scotland all the time and England. Right. Don't actually go to Wales very often, considering it's bloody filmed there. But yeah, I mean, it was a cool way of looking at how the Cairns, you know, what the Cairns were used for. I actually thought that the monsters were kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I was actually disappointed that we didn't see more of them, but I mean, it did actually work very well. Almost like, you know, very alien. I mean, the episode wasn't in black and white, but we didn't see a huge amount of the monsters. But what I saw was great. I mean, and, you know, it had some nobility to it, but it seemed to smack of the same nobility as last week, where the guy was like, you know, I will go off and fight for the Empress. And this time, oh, we're all, you know, the Ninth Legion and the Scots hand in hand are going off to, you know, battle the Light Eaters. So, yeah, it felt, you know, another by the numbers, you know, episode.
Sure.
The whole thing of Nardole leaving, you know, not looking for Bill for 2 days when the doctor's gone. I mean, just didn't seem to make sense. I mean, he, you know, at some points he's very bossy and protective of Bill, and the rest of the time he just can't seem to want to go anywhere near her. Yeah, it was above average.
So I'm going to jump in here. I think Mark is my, there you go. So I'm going to, there's a couple of things that I want to chime in on. One, this episode was written by Rona Monroe, who actually wrote the final Sylvester McCoy episode of 1989. She wrote the final episode of the original run of Doctor Who. After 26 seasons, she wrote that episode, which is why this episode felt, I don't want to say dated, but it felt a little bit more classic from a few standpoints, in that there was no big mystery that called the Doctor to the past. It was them saying, hey, let's have fun with the TARDIS. Let's go in the past, right? So that was kind of an interesting take on it. And Rona Monroe, she obviously has a long history writing, but this is her second she's the only writer to have done both eras of Doctor Who. So there was a little bit of a tie there. I had to watch this episode twice. The first time I watched it, I didn't quite get it. I thought it was just a very passable episode. But then the second time I watched it, I really started to enjoy what the Eaters of Light were. The portal, the interdimensional aspect, the Pict. Which it's funny because it actually got me to read up on who the Pict were and kind of the stones they've left behind, the pictorial stones, the pictures. But I thought it was kind of an interesting clash of a bunch of different worlds. You had the Pict, this ancient tribe. You had the Romans, which were somewhat more modern at the time. Then you have the Doctor, who's from like a future in the past somewhere. And you have Nardole and Bill. So you have people from all these different sort of eras, right? All kind of coming together. And then, of course, the aliens. And I thought it was fantastic when Bill had the conversation about sexuality with the soldiers. And it's something that this season has been really pushing for, which is emphasis on, I don't want to say emphasis, but really addressing race, sexuality, belief, history, hair, you know, things like that, family. It's been, there's been a lot of social issues that this season has tackled sometimes subtly, sometimes not so subtly. And I do think that's a cool, I think it's cool and it's welcome when they're able to make it work like they did in this episode. They've done it in a couple episodes. Instead of, I think last episode, The Empress of Mars, there was the whole kind of racial and class thing that didn't work. It kind of felt forced in. Whereas this week, Bill's conversation with the soldiers actually kind of felt like it was a natural conversation and so on. So, I enjoyed the episode as a whole. There were aspects that didn't quite fit. I didn't like the doctor and Bill just kind of sit on a bet. Let's go into ancient Scotland to discover these Romans. But you know, whatever. I liked it, and it's another good one-off episode. But I loved the ending with Missy and what this all sets up. So we. I guess Nardo let Missy out last episode, and then this episode she's now kind of running amok in the TARDIS, but she hasn't kind of run away. And there was an almost touching moment between her and the doctor at the very end, which I thought, wow, there's something kind of interesting here. The whole rehabilitation of Missy. And part of me starts to think, like, maybe she is rehabilitating before she, you know, meets her ultimate doom, I guess. Maybe this whole idea of the vault is actually working. The doctor's been with her for what, decades now, at least 70, 60, 70, 80 years, hundreds of years at this point, more than likely. So I thought that aspect was really interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing where that goes forward, because there's something really kind of strong there. And there's two episodes left, and the last episode is going to be a feature-length episode that we've been told. So I think this is a great episode for helping kind of reset everything. Where the first like 6-7 episodes were about the vault, and then those dumb the monks kind of ruining everything, that really horrible kind of final episode there. This episode seems to have reset the story back to Missy, back to the vault, back to kind of what has been guiding this whole season. So I really appreciated it. For that standpoint and getting us back on track. So those are my thoughts. And I want to hear yours, Steven.
I don't know that I have a lot to actually say after that kind of lengthy.
I pulled a Strum talking for like a half
hour. You kind of did. That's gimmick infringement, I'm pretty sure. So I think I can actually, within my rights, sue you. So we'll talk about that after the podcast. Don't worry about it. I don't have, like I said, I really just don't have much to say. I do agree with you in that I do think it does feel old, or I'm going to say it feels old. It feels like old Doctor Who, and I don't necessarily I think there's a difference between old Doctor Who and classic Doctor Who, because I don't think being like seeming old necessarily like is a good thing, like, because there is a sense of capturing the spirit of what the show used to be and stuff like that, and then like actually just kind of holding to closely to a lot of what that show, like what the show used to be, mechanically as opposed to just like spiritually. And I think that this is kind of more the former than the latter, in that it's just goofy. It's just kind of the whole episode, just like the shot of the Romans and the Pict. Is that what the, is that how you pronounce it? Am I right? Right there?
Yep. Pict.
Okay. Pict. Are like going into the portal and stuff like that. Like one of them's playing like a flute and kind of like little jaunty little jig and like very clearly walking up to a green screen and just like, it just looks silly. And like the whole concept of like Marcus said at the beginning too, is just like super negated by like a million different ways that they could have done this instead of what they do. But all, you know, that is kind of a little bit waylaid by the fact that I do think the monsters looks kind of cool. Actually, I have a question for both of you that I meant to ask earlier, but I forgot. Was there audio on the monsters for you guys? Did the monsters make noise? Did they roar or make any sounds?
I don't recall, actually. I'd have to rewatch. I don't recall.
because I just watched it on Amazon, and I thought maybe that was like a design trick. Like, I thought that was like intentional, like, oh, they're supposed to be silent and spooky in that way. But then, like, also I started noticing a lot more missing sounds. Like, there's a point where near the end where, like, they knock out the doctor a little bit so that they can go into the portal, and there's no Foley on that at all. Like, on the – I watch on Amazon most episodes, so I don't know if that was the problem with the Amazon version of it, but it seemed like it was – might have actually just been missing some audio. Some of that might have, like, lent to a little bit of, like, kind of a cheaper quality a feeling to the show that I kind of ran into. But other than that, like, you know, a lot of the kind of things going around the episode, it's like, sure. Oh, okay, the message of the episode is we're better when we work together and stuff like that. It's like, sure, like, but it's such a one, I don't know if it's it's a lot of like, I don't even know what word I'm looking for. It's a lot of like platitudes, I guess, without much like real meat behind them. Like, I do appreciate the line about, because I was actually kind of curious what they were going to do with like having Bill try to tell like a Roman soldier. Although I do find it a little bit interesting that like Bill purports herself to be an expert on the Ninth Legion of the Romans and like says she knows so much about the Romans and culture and stuff like that, and then also doesn't happen to know that the Romans like sexuality and stuff like that was very different than it is today, you know, and like some of that stuff. That was a little bit kinky and kind of made that moment feel a little bit like there were almost parts of this episode that felt like they were written by a different person coming in like and adding like a little moment here or there or something like that. I don't know if that's necessarily the case or not. I don't want to take any credit away from the writer who was credited on the episode or anything.
There could have been a Rory the Roman gag. The fact that there wasn't a Rory the Roman gag was disappointing.
Yeah.
I mean, you put in the whole thing about, you know, second class Vestal Virgin. That was amusing. But I mean, the fact that he traveled with a literal Roman centurion for God knows how long, that would have been a nice little throwback. And I think go ahead to this point after you finish, Stephen.
Go ahead, because I think I've pretty much said all I want to say about the episode. I just feel like, the one last thing would be like the crows, and actually. And the crows kind of like nail a little bit of what I found like kind of doesn't really work for me in this episode, which is that I do not like it when Doctor Who treads into the realm of like magic, when it's basically just like it might as well just be like, oh, there's some weird magic going on here. I don't like it when Santa Claus might be real or something like that and the Doctor doesn't have an explanation for it. I don't like when everybody clapped their hands and clicked their heels and the Doctor was suddenly not an old wrinkled imp in the Master's cage and like the power of belief brought him back to life or whatever. I don't like, I know that there are, when that stuff happens on the show and like, and they just kind of like explain away some of the stuff, like Bill hearing the music at the end and stuff like that. It feels to me too much like the show is trying to, in a single episode of the show is like trying to say that here's this important piece of the lore of the fiction of the, like the tapestry of that makes this world go, and like giving it away, like giving responsibility of it away from the characters and stuff like that, because magic can fix this, magic can do this, that or the other thing, the crows can talk or whatever, and the crows like warning the Doctor about monsters or something like that, and like they never really go into like if that's really just like if the crows are just like magic or something like that, or if like the crows are intelligent species or something. Like the Doctor never really establishes that, and everybody can hear the music afterwards, and it's just I don't know. That stuff always feels a little bit cheap to me in this show. I'm not saying that like necessarily like that like having spiritual elements and stuff like that in fiction in general is like that or whatever. Obviously, like. That's not a blanket rule or anything like that, but somehow specifically it just feels antithetical to a lot of what this show does, and too much of like some of the worst things that Doctor Who does, which is like when the big red button syndrome that we've talked about so much on the show, where like all our problems can be solved by X, Y, or Z, and like, oh, well, this girl will be remembered for her brave sacrifice, the Romans will be remembered for their brave sacrifice because magic says that they will, or something like that, and not because people can tell stories and continue to keep the spirit alive, and like that's something that they've, you know, even dealt with on Doctor Who, like talking about like having Robin Hood be like a real person and stuff like that, and like maybe not, maybe he is, maybe he isn't, or and stuff like that. Like how the importance of stories, like when you take away that connection to like real world humans and like the, what they're capable of, I feel like it's almost kind of an insult to kind of what Doctor Who is, which is like this beautiful ongoing story that has its ups and its, it has its very low downs, but it's this story that continues to be relevant and continues to be important to people, including us, over time and stuff like that. And you kind of take away some of the magic of that when you use literal magic. So
I don't know. But yeah, I'll let you slide back into what you were talking about, Marcus.
No, I mean, all I was going to say was, and I hope this is something that perhaps does end with Moffat, you know, and that he has this predilection to, when he has characters who are recurring, with the exception of River Song, he doesn't tend to refer to them once they're gone. Mm-hmm. You can even overuse them, like when Clara was supposed to have died and then gone in her own TARDIS and went off. But yeah, I mean, I would like to see more nods to canon. I've said this all along. I mean, Russell T. Davies was good at doing it because, I mean, he was a huge Who fan. Moffat's done it on occasion, but it's less and less. I'm hoping Chibnall can actually put more nods in because Doctor's been around now 2,000 plus years. He's seen a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Stuff should be referenced from now on. It's not like he's forgetting this stuff.
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, he is the Doctor. We've established at this point, you know, we had, you know, actually even tying back to some of Moffat's own stuff, we've established that the Doctor, you know, no matter how old he gets, will always remember all the stuff that he encounters and stuff like that. You know, we had the Maisie Williams type stuff where she was losing her memory because her brain wasn't prepared for, you know, she was a human brain with like this technology in it, and like her brain couldn't, you know, keep in the breadth of all of her experiences. But the Doctor, you know, he's could because he was, you know, he's a Time Lord. He's biologically that way. He should remember stuff, and you know, both, you know, canonically, there's reasons he should remember stuff, and just like for if you want this show to continue to feel like this ongoing crazy beautiful thing, if you want to continue to give that feeling of immortality almost to that kind of Doctor Who kind of has over most fiction, like you have to reference that stuff. Otherwise, it's all just like dust motes in the wind. And you know, actually going back to the Martian episode, like having the Alpha Centauri call back and even getting back the original voice actress for that's awesome. Like that's a good pull like that. I agree. I hope going forward we get more legacy in Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think we've beaten this to death.
Yeah. I already said way more than I thought.
It does kind of seem like it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of strange retconning with the, you know, teaching the crows to say Ka in reference to Kar.
Magic bullshit. It's what it is.
But it is what it is. It's Doctor Who. It's again, it did feel kind of like a classic Who instead of a modern Who. But let's... out of five crows, what do you guys rate it? I'm going to jump in first. I'm going to give this one a 3.5 crows out of five crows. Steven?
Two crows. Two flat crows.
Marcus?
I give the last one 2.5. It was slightly better, 2.75.
Yep. Okay, all right. I went up a half point, you went up a quarter point. I could see that.
I went down a half point.
You went down a half point. Good friend Alan Paxton says, just caught up with the latest episode and I have some thoughts. As an Aberdonian can confirm, little has changed as Scottish weather is very gray and could kill you. Was a good premise and had a fairly interesting ending, but for me the standout moment came at the end between the Doctor and Missy. I really want to see more of the interaction and think Capaldi and Gomez could easily carry off an interesting and engaging episode, just the two of them, showing their time as prisoner and guard over the centuries. How long was she in it? In all, I like what we got, but want to see so much more of Dr. Missy together, and hopefully next weekend's episode pays off as it looks fun. So I think we all agree that Missy has been really good this season for what little they've kind of sparingly used her. I'm glad the reveal was slow. It was a good build up. And now that we know it's her You know, she has, Michelle Gomez has been fantastic as Missy over the years. I think they nailed it with her. I mean, it was kind of a poor ending for that first season, but last year she was fantastic in the episode she was in. And this year, I think she's been really good. She's almost this bizarre. She's bizarrely likable, right? She is. She's endearing as a character on the show, and her take on the Master / Missy is so strong.
I really like, it's a small thing, but it's just a one weird affectation about her performance that I always liked. It's like, I like the way that she's just constantly like seamlessly switching between accents. That yes. She can like almost never tell like when she's flipping from one to the next and stuff like that. It almost like she's trying to keep you off guard as the viewer, like as to like who she even is at any given point.
Right.
You know, and you know, some implications are maybe like, you know, she doesn't even entirely know who she is now that we see, like, maybe she has the capacity for good. I'll believe it when I see it. I think that this is all just a big ruse that's leading mm-hmm. up to a big betrayal, but we'll see. I don't know. I don't buy the Master / Missy crying over innocent people dying. So we'll see if that's all a ruse or not.
We'll see. We'll see. We got some time yet to find out. Well, that's it for this week's look at the two episodes. I did want to, before we sign off, I want to recap something really quick. I posted an article of my time with John Barrowman at the Motor City Comic Con. I mentioned in the past, I think a couple weeks ago, that he did a session there, filled an audience, filled a conference room, a giant hall with people. It was standing room only. John Barrowman tends to do that whenever he does these events. But I'm just going to read this thing really quickly because I think there's some really interesting aspects to it relating to Doctor Who. So at Motor City Comic Con last month, John Barrowman entered the conference hall before his panel session dressed in a bright blue gender non-conforming TARDIS dress that he had bought on the show floor earlier. And then he convinced the onstage interpreter to sign the words "hung like a donkey" while audience members stuffed dollars in his shorts. John Barrowman is still a ball of awesome, and I sincerely doubt that could change no matter what show he's on. In an hour-plus session, Barrowman revealed aspects of his life and career that reaffirmed just how energetic, flamboyant, and personable he manages to remain, how he uses that to continue engaging his audience. Though he's consistently requested by – this is important. Though he's consistently requested by fans to return to Doctor Who, he admits that it's ultimately out of his control. The BBC would have to contact him first. That isn't happening anytime now. That hasn't stopped him from prodding his fandom to take up the torch, however. Barrowman related one story in which fans began flooding the BBC's inbox with pleas for his return to the Who universe when they found that the network had to field all requests. So interesting note about the BBC, they have to reply to emails and to letters and so on. So all requests come in, they have to reply to them. So his fans began to flood. What's that?
Those poor bastards.
Yep. Yep. Some poor intern. The overwhelming response prompted the company to reply back to John with, "You need to stop getting your fans riled up." So he says, letters are one thing, but he acknowledges that it would take more than that to raise the eyebrows of the BBC. There would have to be some big fan campaign, some John Barrowman resurgence convention. I don't know.
Even if they just put some end to the, you know, the face of Bo storyline on how he became the Bo.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, maybe some sacrifice, how he became this older than millennia character, and we revisit him down the line where he's starting to change into this huge heed.
I'd be happy with that.
That would be nice because we haven't. I mean, apart from the end of the Tennant era, where, you know, he got hooked up with Alonso, and we all know how that didn't end up. He ended up back in Torchwood, on Miracle Day. He's done with the Arrowverse. He is available, and it would be nice to see him join the crew for a couple of episodes next season.
Mm-hmm. I'll finish off. By the way, hello, Sean.
Hi.
We were just about to sign off. I'll finish this really quick. Working on Doctor Who was always one of his dreams, as he grew up watching the show in his youth in the UK.
Are you just reading this entire article?
Yes, because I don't think you guys did. He mentioned how he missed homework assignments because he stayed up late to watch. That's why he was super happy that the writers and producers mixed aspects of his.
Oh, dear. Dally's voice has left.
Yeah. Oh, that's so strange.
He's gone full Strom, as we like to say.
You bastards. Mm-hmm. I will just say this. He loved.
I didn't even do it that time.
God dang, Sean. He loved working with David Tennant. That was his favorite doctor because of the writers back then, Russell T. Davies and the producers, allowed the doctor to have kind of his own personality, which I thought was really kind of interesting, or the personality of the actor, I guess, which was very interesting in bringing that into the show, as opposed to what our good boy Moffat did with Matt Smith and even Capaldi in that first season, which was to write the character and force the actors into that role. So I think it seems like Moffat has kind of loosened up a little bit on Capaldi these last couple years, but that first season was pretty horrific, and a lot of that Matt Smith stuff was very much Moffat dictating how the doctor should be instead of letting the doctor be what the doctor wanted to be. So I think
with Matt Smith initially, I mean, he wasn't a huge name actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, Capaldi has at least been around the block.
Sure.
And, you know, he's put his own stamp on it, 'cause I think, you know, Moffat knows and respects that. But I mean, for Moffat, he was taking over with a brand new doctor who was an totally unknown quantity. Tennant had actually had some success with a couple of different shows before he took over, not least Casanova with Russell T. Davies.
Sure, sure.
Mm. So, I mean, this was an unknown quantity, and he was under, you know, Moffat did have to maintain the cash cow. So I'm sure he was more hands-on. And I like to think that Matt Smith's personality did come more to the fore towards the end.
Towards the end, I'm sure. Right.
You know, as he grew into the role. But yeah, I think people should basically go to our Facebook page, click on that link, and read the article. Use any one of our voices to read it in your head. I mean, perhaps you want to do a paragraph as Norton, as Mr. Norton, although, of course, that would just be quiet because he wouldn't turn up for a paragraph.
Sure. My goodness.
Maybe, you know, you can do it as me. Who knows? But go read it. Dali did some
good stuff.
And, you know, read everything Dali does so that he has the page views and he's happy. And I never have to sit through that again.
Hi, Sean.
Hi. What did you guys think of the episode?
If you want to hear that, Sean, you're going to have to tune in. You're going to have to listen to the episode when it airs.
I would not subject myself to that if you paid me.
Hey, Sean, tell us what you thought of this week's episode. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's Lonely TARDIS. We'll see you
next by a nanosecond.
These guys are something else.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the episode.
I'm the only one who's not muted, so sign us out, I think.
Poor Dali's been muted, but we are out.
Yes.
Enjoy the first part of the two-part finale next week. I may or may not be here because I'm going to Puerto Vallarta on Saturday.
You jerk. My wife not inviting us.
Vacation. I might not be able to see the show until I come back. So I may or may not be here this time next week. So from the glorious team of myself and Stephen Strom, we bid you adieu.
From the part-timer that
is naughty, we bid you see ya. And, you know, in case Dali wants to start reading the phone book, we'll say goodbye from him as well.
I love you guys. You can find us at Lonely TARDIS, lonelytardis.com. Rate, review, comment, like us all over the place, yada, yada, yada. You can find us individually at Dali Domofsky, at Annoyed Gamer, at Steven Strum, StevenStrom, at Sean Norton. And we will see you all on the next Lonely TARDIS. We love you.